22 minutes to the top of the hour. This is a Miraya Breakfast Show, and this is where the nation's biggest conversations begin every morning. My name is Irene Lasso. Now, 10 years after independence, South Sudan remains a deeply fragile nation due to various factors brought about by conflict. Because of this, the international community has taken keen interest in ensuring that the country finds its foot towards a developmental path. Now, the U.S. government has three main priorities for South Sudan, which include supporting the emergence of core institutions of democratic governance to counter violent competition for political power, reduce the need for humanitarian assistance, and lay the groundwork for a self-reliant South Sudan that can enable long-term recovery and economic growth. Well, to understand how the implementation of this is unfolding, I'm joined in the studio by the Chargé Affairs in the U.S. Embassy, South Sudan, David Renz. Thank you so much for making our time to speak to us. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Thank you very much for having me on.
Right. Firstly, what is your impression with regards to South Sudan's journey towards durable peace?
Well, it's been a long journey, and it's a long way still from complete, I'm afraid, because of the failure to quickly and fully implement the peace agreement, the revitalized peace agreement that was reached in 2018. Some of the key benchmarks of that agreement are long overdue, and that is creating challenges for the country as we stand 9 months away from the end of that agreement.
Mm-hmm. So what is the U.S. Government doing to help parties involved to accelerate the peace?
Well, we worked very closely across the elements of the peace agreement to support implementation of that agreement. I have been here in South Sudan since mid-August of last year. Every engagement I have with members of the government encourages them to take what I consider some of the key steps necessary to prepare this country for the elections, which are intended to be the transitional milestone to a peaceful, democratic South Sudan.
Mm-hmm. Then we understand you have three main priorities for South Sudan. Just kindly make us understand how your government handles the specifics of those main areas.
Well, certainly on the political front, we're working very closely with government leaders, leaders in South Sudan civil society, to encourage full, complete, and timely implementation of the peace agreement. But more than that, we are actively supporting the people of South Sudan. And unfortunately, that means supporting a very large humanitarian challenge here in South Sudan that's caused in part by natural factors, the flooding that has now gone on over 3 years, essentially mm-hmm. one big flood.
Mm-hmm.
But equally unfortunately, perhaps more unfortunate, has been the impact of subnational conflict and the displacement of people. We have 2.5 million people internally displaced in South Sudan. We've had South Sudan's productive breadbasket in Tambora essentially destroyed last summer because of intercommunal violence. And so we work through USAID, we work on conflict resolution programs to try and build the capacity of the South Sudanese people to resolve their conflicts peacefully. We work very hard to try and get the government to move on establishment of the necessary unified forces that were envisioned by the peace agreement as something that would exist before the formation of the transitional government, to provide peace and security to South Sudan, to provide a peaceful environment for those elections.
Mm-hmm.
And our development programs, although small, are working to build livelihoods, create opportunities for youth, and really address the underlying factors that prevent South Sudan from being the prosperous country that it could be.
Right. So are you satisfied with the response from the government on the main areas?
Well, progress has been deeply slow. We are not satisfied by the fact that the international community provides 70% or more of the support to the people of South Sudan, while the government fails to pay basic salaries, to fund its healthcare infrastructure, its education infrastructure. The international community is doing this. And we're deeply frustrated by the fact that South Sudan cannot account for the revenues that it's earning, particularly from its oil revenues. South Sudan has income, it's the choices to make and how to spend that or divert it that are concerning. Mm-hmm. One of the areas that we're very active, along with our partners in the UK and Norway, is in the public financial management provisions of Chapter 4 of the peace agreement. It's an area where we've perhaps seen more progress than in other aspects of the agreement. It has been slow. It has benefited from some South Sudanese who are more willing to provide transparent information. And so we've seen recently better information on the oil cargoes and where they're being sold. And we're looking into that to try and get more information, a better understanding of the underlying agreements that those oil cargoes are supporting. But there has been progress there. And, of course, South Sudanese have seen real progress in the stabilization of the exchange rate, which occurred just about the time I got here. Before I arrived, it had hit upwards of 600 Sudanese pounds to the dollar on the parallel market. It's now holding fairly stable around 430 or so, with occasional spikes, but that's normal for a freely convertible tradable currency.
Right. You may say that again, but of course it is not felt in the market. The price is still going high, and we do not know how they will get down or if there's any hope that they will. So back to the policies. Is there a time frame attached to them? If yes, what is a time frame attached?
Well, if you mean, is there a time frame for the U.S., the U.S. looks to the peace agreement. The peace agreement has a time frame. Mm-hmm. And that peace agreement expected things like the conversation around a new constitution to have actually taken place a couple of years ago now.
Mm.
That should have been in place. We mentioned the necessary unified forces. There are a number of laws that should have been passed soon after the pre-transition period concluded. All of those are still pending with the legislature.
Hmm.
So the time frame, it's a time frame in the agreement. And we recognize that realistically, not everything in that agreement is going to happen by February of next year. But there are certain things that are absolutely important, and those are the necessary conditions to prepare for elections, continued work to ensure that the public financial management reforms are in place so that the government can provide for its people, the nascent transitional justice mechanisms, the Commission on Truth, Reconciliation, and Healing. They finally started the workshops on that, the consultations. Okay, again, something that should have started long ago. I think what's important at this point is that there be sufficient progress to give the South Sudanese people confidence that the government is finally truly committed to and feels a sense of urgency to implementing the agreement.
Right, and going by what you say, insufficient progress, and of course, let me just play the devil's advocate now. What will happen, or what would your next step be if you don't see any results?
Well, I think that's really a question for the South Sudanese people.
Okay.
We're here to support the people of South Sudan. How we do that will depend on what happens here on the ground. What concerns me is I think that there are a lot of South Sudanese people who are beginning to talk about what happens next, about how we get from where we are today to where we need to be next February and beyond, and what the situation looks like after February. As I said in my address to the National Press Club last Friday, we don't have the space, the opportunity for people to feel free to carry on those conversations more publicly. And I think that is it's a concern for South Sudan, because at this point, it's not for the leaders to decide where this country goes next. They've had their opportunity. It's for the people of South Sudan to decide where this country goes next. Ideally, that conversation would take part as part of the conversation around a new constitution, a permanent constitution. But the legislation to start that process remains bottled up in the national legislature.
Mm. Right. So your government has imposed some sanctions on a few individuals in South Sudan. Are you seeing any results of those sanctions?
Well, we've certainly angered a few people. I think we've seen some results, but sanctions, unfortunately, are a very blunt instrument. They recognize and condemn actions that people take that are against the peace process, mm-hmm. that are against the interests of the South Sudanese people, and they are important in that sense. It's part of accountability, and leaders have to be held accountable for their actions. Sanctions don't always generate specific results, but they're not really designed to achieve specific results. They are a reflection of the accountability of the people that they are targeting.
Right. And Mr. David, thank you so much for making our time to come and speak to us. What is your message to our leaders?
It's time to get moving. It's time to implement this agreement. Time is running out, and the patience of the South Sudanese people are running out. You are the leaders of this country. You owe your efforts to the people of this country. That's what they expect from you. That's what they want from you. And that's what they will insist on.
David Rent, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much.
Right. And David is a charge the affairs U.S. To South Sudan. And, of course, that leaves us with only 11 minutes to the top of the hour. If you have a strong view or comment, please send it to 0912-177-141. My name is Irene Lasso. Good morning. I'll be right back.